visitors. We're encouraged by your desire to worship with us. We've also got a few that are sick and some traveling. We'll keep them in our prayers and hope for their safe return. What we are engaged in this morning is a continuation of a series what we're calling Foundations of Christian Living. And we look at section one that deals with foundation of commandments. Loving God with all your heart, all your soul, all your might. Loving your neighbor as yourself.
There we go. The goal of our instruction, of since love is involved in both of those, we did a description of or an explanation of what love was. And Jesus said everything else hangs on these. So that's why they were important and mentioned first. Everything else, every other law, is just a more detailed analysis of that in a particular different aspect of them. So we moved into section two, dealing with the foundations of daily worship, as opposed to section three, when we get to it, what we do in assembly. But there is required of us on a daily basis a devotion to God in a way, the word that's used is latria, a daily worship to God, of appreciation for what he does to us. And so we're looking at various things of how to express ourselves in that way through personal prayer, personal Bible study, that is, talking to God, having him, you know, talk to us, and then looking at the things we can do to augment our spiritual growth and the change that a Christian needs to go through. And these are things that a lot of people, other faiths, denominations, whatever, don't even think about. I mean, especially if you're oriented with all you have to do is believe and no deeds are involved, then the techniques that God has given us in order to change back to what he intended us to be are completely lost on them. But you're privy to some things that, you know, that'll help make you better people and different people. And that's one of the things we look at, but it needs a daily awareness of it. Today's lesson, 8, has to do with spiritual warfare. As Paul takes us through this, of considerations of how we should approach life. And part of the context that was just read, verses 3 and 4, we don't walk in the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction. So we've got a war going on. It's a spiritual war. We've got some very powerful weapons we need to consider as we go through this. But there's something else, too. In our enlistment into this, one of the terms used to designate a Christian is that he is a soldier of Christ. We have various songs, you know, onward to Christian soldiers and all this. And so it's a metaphor that's used by Paul to order to get us to get our mind oriented about something we should be familiar with, of the kind of warfare that goes on. A lot of younger men are engaged in some sort of enlistment. And this is one of the things that Paul talks about. He uses the term of himself and of Timothy when he says, writing to Timothy, 2 Timothy 2:3, suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. And then begins to explain some aspects of it. When Paul talks about the single-minded purpose necessary to serve God, one of the things that most the individuals know that serve in the military, whether they're male or female, is that you cannot get that involved with other things. I know the pay is not that great. Been with guys that, you know, they decided to get married in the service. The Marines decided that if they wanted you to have a wife, they would have issued you one, so there's no sympathy involved. And so if you wanted to get by, you know, a lot of times you had to go, you know, get another job, you know, while you're in the military. But one of the things becomes obvious when the military calls you to go someplace, the other job, you can forget it. You can forget the family. Your primary loyalty or interest has to be to the service. And so this is what Paul, you know, this is true of any time, any culture, civilization, or whatever. And Paul says, no soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. Now, this is not too different than our loyalty to the kingdom of God, which we'll be looking at. On the parable of the sower, we just got through looking at in our study of Mark in the morning, why the the seed dies, why the kingdom withers in an individual's heart, is because he gets entangled in the world. The cares, the worries, the pleasures, all these things. It gives us a picture of what are we trying to accomplish? What should be the main priority? And we'll get a little bit more to that this evening in the lesson. But it's just something that, we need to pick out of this metaphor of service is that, what is the ultimate service that should be orient our minds? How can we understand life as to the most important parts of it? Again, Paul proceeds further. Even more than just a soldier, the Christian must be one who plans his life as a campaign against the world. As a general campaigns against an army in order to overcome it, Paul tells Timothy he must not only struggle to win each battle, but he must, as we go into this. Now, there's two passages here as he's writing to Timothy in the first letter. Now, I'm going to the sixth chapter first, where he goes, fight the good fight of faith, take hold of the eternal life to which you were called, and you made the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. Now, I've highlighted fight the good fight. It's basically a one-on-one situation. That's what's described by the terms. Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians 9, about him boxing and not just beating at shadows, but keeping in his mind that he's got an opponent in front of him, and there's something that he has to train for. But it's not just the individual effort that we kind of understand we have to do. In the first chapter, verse 18, says, this command I entrust to you, Timothy, my son, in accordance with the prophecies previously made concerning you, that by them you might fight the good fight. Now, different terms that are used. In fact, the word fight in the first, we just look at to struggle. The word for fight in the second verse here is the Greek word used for a planned strategy or campaign. So you can not only look at your life as a Christian as just something as a soldier one-on-one, but you also have to look at it, especially preachers, elders, whatever, as a general in looking at a campaign that's got to be waged. And it beholds us to know more about how wars are put out there as to what's necessary, knowledge of the enemy. Paul's going to talk about that, strategies involved, a good intelligence network. All these things you have to know. You've got to know what's coming over the ridge. This is just a very practical thing. What is it a Christian must face? Some doctrines, some problems come and go. You got to know what's on the horizon and coming at you and the church, in the immediate future, and get everybody prepared for it. I mean, there's a lot of this that's involved. Sometimes we miss of just how common sense strategies that God uses in order to spread the word and protect his people. You'll notice as we get into Mark in our study that Jesus warns his disciples of the impending disaster that's about to happen to Jerusalem. The Romans are about to level the place. And he tells them, get prepared. When you start seeing the signs, get out. In fact, if you wait too long, you're not even going to have time to pick up anything. Now you're not even going to have time to go back home. You're just going to have to run for it. So he makes them aware of that. Plus, as you look at the gospel, how it spread in the first century, it wasn't just haphazard or whatever. We can see that the Spirit had a hand in where he sent Philip. Direct him here and there. And you'll notice that what the apostles did is they went to all the chief cities. They went to the cutoff places, the crossroads of every caravan route, every shipping lane, so that as they preached in Corinth and Athens and whatever, they know they're talking to people that are sailors, merchants, whatever, so that as they hear it in that city, they're going to take it back with them to wherever they're from. And that would be very, very extensive. Fedor tells us that in the first century, there was Roman ships in Shanghai. So, there was extensive travel in the Roman world. Now, what I thought I'd do is, since you've got your little thing that you have to fill out at the end of this, letting you know I'm not just telling you what to do. I have to do it myself in order to get by. But I want to show you some things that are helpful to you, in planning your life, okay, especially around God. For myself, I'm going back 2 weeks ago. Okay, this thing starts at 7. I'm usually up at 5, 5:30. So by the time I'm starting to hit all this stuff, at 7 o'clock, a good part of it's done. But there's things, yeah, I have to realize about myself. Now, I have, do I have a pointer here someplace? I'm just going to pick this thing up before I got up here. Here we go. Now, first of all, I know that I've got stuff to study for, you know, so Mark's up there. And I break it down because I know what I have to be by a certain spot. So I have a deadline, and so I've got Mark here. Now, right now, it's like Mark 13, verses 1 through 9. Well, aren't we just studying 5? Yeah. I try to keep that much ahead of you. For the sermons and stuff, I'm about 2 months ahead. I remember when I was a young man and I was just asked to start preaching. You know, the preacher that asked me, his way of dealing with Sunday morning services, and he told me, he says, he didn't know what he was going to preach while he's sitting on the front seat waiting to get up there. I mean, talk about freaking out. You know, no way I could do that. Extemporaneous. Plus, I don't think, you know, I know of other preachers that do that, where they do that well of a job for the gospel and putting it, you know, logically in people's minds. So what I try to do is prepare way ahead of time so that I've, you know, if emergencies come up, I got, you know, I can deal with it. You know, funerals, weddings, you know, any kind of other things, I've got the time to counsel people. And I don't have to worry about, especially if it's Saturday night, I've already got my stuff done. In fact, even for the Sunday, you know, this Sunday, you know, I've got, you know, this just goes through Wednesday, Thursday, you know, I've got a little schedule of the things that have to be done Thursday. I come down to the building, I go through my sermon, find out what fits on the overhead and what doesn't, you know, the things that need to be corrected in the handouts. And I go again like last night because I want to get it in my brain, you know, and let it, you know, the subconscious think on it all night. A lot of preparation that goes into stuff. You deserve it. Okay? But I've also, you know, I've got personal needs. You know, each day I have a study of the Psalms for my own personal growth. You know, sometimes you get the benefits of this stuff, but it's for me. I have to grow, you know, spiritually. Okay? Coming down into it, fix the sermons. If there's any, you know, things I found while I'm up here, you'd be surprised when you're doing this. Yeah, you know, how many glitches you're finding when you thought you caught everything. So fixing that, prepping the bulletin for the week, 2 weeks ahead sometimes. Rework foundations. I was working on foundations 13. We're on lesson 9, okay? You're on lesson 9. I'm already on 13 redoing this. Okay, and getting stuff plus, you know, the PowerPoints. Something I was telling somebody at the beginning of this week, the way you plan your life, I mean, how do you want to do it? Do you want to be pushed everywhere you go? I hate bringing people out of the audience because it embarrasses them terribly. But yeah, just imagine, say, if you were standing up in the middle aisle and I was pushing on you, just pushing you down the aisle, and you were feeling that jerking, whatever, you know, and you didn't like it. Most people don't. What if you took one or two steps ahead of me? I could be doing this all day and you wouldn't even know it. Why? Because you've put your own goals. You've put your own, you know, desires, you know, you're the way you want to go ahead of that. Now that goes into just about anything, especially if you're a student in school. So the teacher gives you so many, you know, so many chapters, so many problems to do. You know, do you just do the minimum? In fact, sometimes, you know, what the problem with kids is they don't do that, so they're not up to speed with the things, the way the class progresses. Now, just because the teacher has set the boundaries doesn't mean you have to abide by them. I don't mean not do them or rebel. I mean, if you got a chapter to read, how about a chapter and a half? How about 2 chapters? Now you're not feeling the pressure anymore. You're ahead of the curve. Don't do the 10 problems that they gave you in the back of the book. Do the 20. Do more. You know, set your own boundaries, your own levels that you want to reach to. Most people that are successful do that. As a preacher, again, as an example, I can just get up here and kind of, you know, reach from some notes and meet the qualification for what a preacher does. How many preachers do you know where you've been to that you get a handout for every sermon? They get you get a PowerPoint, not just a bunch of bullets, but you're getting pictures and everything else. Do more than what's required of you. And I do it for the benefit of the teaching. You know, I know you get more out of the pictures that you see. And you know, with a handout, you can take it with you. So you know, even if you don't hear what I'm saying, you know, whatever, or something happens to me, you've still got the message. Something that you can go over again, something you can give to somebody else. You know, we try to do this to make the maximum benefit and advantage to you of going beyond. Some of the other things in here, not only for myself, but I've got a little bit of evidences here. Every day I do a study about evidences for the Scriptures because I might have to talk to somebody else and convince them about, you know, God in the Bible. More than that, okay, I've scheduled for myself some Greek chapters to read or reread, you know, flashcards to go through, exercises to do in the back of the book. I've also got the Hebrew to do. Okay, I've got to change my board and update it every week. You know, I have to get done with the last week. I got to put another week in there in full extent, a little whiteboard I have in my office. I'm trying to learn a little bit of Spanish. That's none of your business. Okay? Or how well I'm doing at it. Okay, and then I got things to do because even though these are standard things that you know pretty much occupy every day, you know, 6 days a week. Okay, now because I'm pushing myself, and you'd be surprised how much you know you'll kill yourself just to be able to color in one of these little boxes that you've done it. Okay, I've got areas here where I've got a to-do list, you know, things to do, you know, and I've got time. And here, you know, I've been working on an evolution track. You'll get that in a couple of weeks. Okay. Patty knows all about it. She's, you know, handling all my corrections. But I have to make time for it. You know, there's things we do, the website and stuff like that, that gets done in this congregation, you're going to find in other congregations. But it comes from people willing to put, you know, to do more. Okay. Twice a year now we're looking at an evangelism program. It's got to be, you know, planned for. When we had a VBS, I had to work on that about 4 to 6 months ahead of time in order to get out. There's just so much material for every grade level. But again, it's planning what you're going to do. Planning what you're going to do in the community. The evangelism, whatever you know, courses or things, you know, programs you got, you know, you got to treat it like a campaign. You got to be actively thinking about it, preparing yourself, preparing what you need for what you're going to deal with other things. Again, this is standard stuff, but a lot of people I found out they kind of overlook it. In fact, Olin, my nephew, who's got a Southern California preachers, you know, conference seminar going on, you know, every year. You know, one of the things he wanted me to do was to, you know, do this kind of thing for them so they could get organized because he was tired of guys handing in all their sermons like the night before or their lectures. But he made a point of it. He asked one of the guys, when did you get your stuff? And he goes, well, I got it in last night and it wasn't quite done yet. Yeah, and he said, well, you know, my uncle here had it done you know, like a month ago. You know, I'm that way. I'm paranoid. It's a sickness, okay? But it's a way of, you know, dealing with emergencies. It takes the pressure off. You know, I've got it all laid out. I can sleep at night, so I don't have to worry about, you know, sometimes what will keep you, trying to remember everything that you're going to do the next day. I don't have that problem. I've got other problems. But I don't have that one. Plus, as you project for the future, you know, and it's all here and you're forcing yourself, you're not just lackadaisically going through it. You know, you'll find if you get done here quicker, then you can start going ahead and getting things done. And this is how I get, you know, 5 sermons, 6 sermons ahead. Now, this works for school. This works for work. Okay? It's a way of getting organized. God was organized, very orderly, not chaos. He gave us a universe that is ordered. And as soldiers, he wants us to plan the way we're going to invade the world and make it a better place. So this is just some of the you know things to kind of help. Okay. that it is imperative that one commits his life in this way to the Lord and not just to try to remain an uninvolved bystander. I mean, think of yourself as a Christian. You know, are you actively, I guess the buzzword now is proactive. Do you have to be told what to do, you know, what lessons to do, and you barely get them? Or are you getting ahead of it? Are you telling yourself what you need to do and actively pursuing it? So you're not just reacting to things, but you're proactive. In fact, to be a good servant of God, somebody will tell you whether it's in the military, what they call aides. You get a general, and his aide will be maybe a major or a lieutenant colonel. What's his job? Kind of be a gopher for him, but the very best he can do is to anticipate the general. You ever want, you know, if you saw the series MASH, you know why they called the little guy Radar? Because every time the colonel wanted something, the guy already had it in his hand. He zipped in. In fact, he'd finish the colonel's sentences and everything else. You know, he knew what was necessary, and he had it there and provided it even before the colonel asked him. And this is what hopefully we can do as a servant, a good steward of God, is to start to anticipate, you know, God's needs, what he wants from us as a church, as an individual Christian, and get proactive in life. Yeah, look at it as a challenge, as a warfare, as a battle, you know, whatever. That has to be planned for. And because God views it as either one is totally, on his side, or one is offering support to the enemy. I mean, even if you're dragging your feet, you're still coming to services, you know, and you're kind of doing, you know, you're filling in the blanks on the stuff. You know, are you just kind of there? Yeah, are you sitting right now in the service and you're going, man, when's this guy going to shut up? I know how you feel. I'm looking up here and going, when am I going to shut up? Right. Yeah, and get on with it. Yeah, it's sometimes our minds get oriented that way. But we need to get into it. We need to, you know, concentrate on the singing, on the classes, on whatever, to make the most of it, to anticipate it, and even go beyond it to see what we can do for it. You know, in Matthew 12, 3, he who is not with me is against me. Who does not gather with me scatters. Okay? In an army, okay? What kind of soldier would you be? Are you someone here that, you know, you're hearing the battle going on and you're already putting your gear together? You know, so when they call the formation to move out, you've already got everything ready. You've got your rifle, you got your, you know, your backpack, you're fully dressed. You know, you've gone over your training, you know, in your own mind so that you're set ahead of time. You're ready for it. Or are you going to have to be pulled out of the rack and, you know, yelled at and told to do this, and then while you're sitting there blurry-eyed, rubbing your eyes and stuff like that? Are you really for God and wanting to, you know, to work for him? Okay, and you know, the enemy, 1 Peter 5:8, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Okay, this is the main person, you know, that we're warring against. This is the main arch enemy, Satan himself. Okay. There's a whole war going on that a lot of times we're not even aware of. In Daniel, Daniel gets visited by Michael the archangel, introduced as a prince, and he's been fighting the prince of Persia, and now he's about to go and fight the prince of Greece. What's he talking about? Talking about supernatural forces behind the scenes. You know, we've seen some major wars on this planet, World War I, World War II, other kind of conflicts. Those are all pawn games in what's really going on. The upheaval of nations is just the move of the little pieces. There's far greater things going on in another realm, totally unseen, that God gives us revelation about. Gives us insights. And it's God against, especially the book of Revelation, is God against Satan. Okay? And Satan is presented as an adversary, someone against us, that, you know, prowls, he's hungrily, you know, looking for it. In fact, this word devour means literally to just swallow down. Satan is the main aggressor against the work of God. Ultimately, all struggle is a war waged against his efforts. When we talk about fighting against the lures of the world, we are talking about the devil's world, what he's made of it. This is something else that, in fact, one of the girls that went back to college, she's another college, and she didn't like what's going on. You know, it's hard. You know, sometimes we're kind of protected in a little envelope, being Christians, you know, families, Christian families and stuff. And she's around people now that just want to party all the time. The language is terrible, whatever. You get that when you get in the service, too. In fact, you know, people, you know, like myself that have gone in, maybe kind of lackadaisical in their Christianity, and suddenly you're brought up, you know, face to face with the world. You see what's going on. You can see what the other, you know, what other, you know, young people are doing. I mean, when I was in the service, 80% of them, I was told, had a choice of either 4 years in the Marine Corps or 6 years in prison. 80% of them. The guys I knew were gang members, you know, from other things. You know, when we were detached overseas, it wasn't, you know, the enemy, you know, Charlie, we had to worry about. It's the race riots that were going on and people getting stabbed in the rack. Okay. Going out, getting drunk, coming back, tearing up the barracks, you know, vomiting all over the place in the bathroom, whatever. You just got to, you know, look at it, and you know, all this language that's going on, and you just got to go, I mean, you're at the crossroads. God is showing you, this is what the world is really like. This is what you thought was so neat and you want to get involved in. And you realize, no, it isn't that cool. It's really stupid. It's really dumb. It's really unhygienic. Yeah, and you got to make a decision to make. I mean, it's probably the best thing. It was for me, because you look at it and you go, oh, there definitely is a crossroads here. I've either got to go this way or that way. You know, it was almost the decision was easy. You know, I'd rather stay with God. Because when you get a look at the raw underbelly, the open autopsy of the world, you're not going to like it at all. And you were dead in your trespasses and sins in which you all formerly walk according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. You know, these Christians that Paul writes to at Ephesus, they were in that. They saw it. This is why probably had a better understanding than us that had been raised in the church. They'd been there and saw, you know, the world, you know, just not even has any answers. You know, it may come wrapped in a pretty little package, but once you take the ribbon off, you know, there's nothing but foul stuff in the middle of it. The encounters one has with the devil will, in all probability, not be directly with him, but with those who represent him in this life, those that spread his ungodly philosophies and religious lies. That's what you're contending with. Or 1 John 4:1, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out in the world. That's what you're contending with. People that are putting out all sorts of heresies and doctrines and stuff that just aren't true. And it matters what you believe, because it has a consequence. It matters what you believe. Unfortunately, not everyone who is conveying the views of the devil will appear as someone odious and evil. Satan is talked about as being an angel of light, or appearing such. He will, in instance, appear in the disguise of a friend. Notice how he appeared to Jesus at one time. Mark 8, and Jesus was stating the matter plainly about his death, you know, upcoming, his crucifixion, his suffering, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. No, you don't have to do that. We'll stand by you. But turning around, you know, notice what Jesus is doing. You know, he's talking to Peter, and he turns around and he sees all the disciples listening. And so the chastisement has been in public, so Jesus has to deal with it in public. Turning around and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan." One of his closest disciples was now being used by his archenemy against him. A lot of times you're going to find that. Friends, family are telling you things you don't need to hear because it's wrong. And you've got to recognize it as such. You're not setting your mind on God's interest, but man's. And a lot of times you're going to get that. You're going to get, because of the situations, you know, people get into, there may be an adulterous situation, you know, homosexual, some sort of, you know, addiction or whatever, and they're going to give you the hard on the sleeve arguments. They're going to give you the beating, you know, the beating bloody heart kind of routine. Oh, you know, the poor women and children kind of stuff. Okay. What they're doing is they're siding with man, and they're not siding with God. You got to be careful. It's going to be so easy to be sucked in to your peers and everything else as they give you these really emotional arguments. And you don't want to hurt their feelings and whatever, but they are dead wrong. And you're going to have to learn to take a stand. It's a battle for hearts and minds. One's worst enemy, though, comes from a very unexpected source. In the words of a very famous comic strip, Pogo, we have met the enemy, and they is us. James 1:14, each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. The devil inside of you is going to be one of the strongest battles you're ever going to wager. The lure of the world inside of you, you know, the taste of it, wanting, you know, to draw you further and further into it. When the lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when the sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Yeah, it's something that sucks you farther and farther in. You got to fight against it. This was read Wednesday night. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, it's from the world. Yeah, we just had a discussion in the high school class about, is it okay to lie? Yeah. Are there certain circumstances? You have the example of Abraham, you know, who kind of told a half-truth. Now, is it okay to lie? Situation ethics, Fletcherism. Are there circumstances that you can build, you know, where you got to do a lesser evil? First of all, never fight on another man's home ground. Don't ever have to accept the rules as laid down, especially not in a war. Who's the father of lies? Satan. If you think it's okay to lie, that's Satan talking to you. And that's the one you're listening to. Okay. What God says, no equivocating, thou shalt not lie. He doesn't go, thou shalt not lie in certain circumstances. Okay. I mean, when you get down to it and you think, well, I'm going to make this judgment that it's okay to lie now and God will accept it. You've missed the point. God's the judge, not you. You've decided that you can do this, what is wrong, and he's got to buy it. You've become the judge, not him. What you do is the best you possibly can under all circumstances. And if you finally break down because somebody's almost beating you to death or injecting you with so much drugs that you're spilling your guts, then God can judge that you bore all you could. But until that, don't make those kind of assessments or judgments. Oh, let's see what's going on here. Your weapons. The last thing that God is advocating is the spreading of his kingdom by physical violence. As Jesus told Pilate, if he was setting up a worldly kingdom, then his followers would fight that way. However, as seen in the opening passage for this lesson, our war is a spiritual one, not a carnal one. We are therefore waging a war of thoughts and ideas. A lot more powerful. The pen is mightier than the sword. Get the thoughts out there. Get the ideas. Get the arguments for them. The concepts live long past the author of them. We can see that with a lot of statesmen. You can see it with Christ. Okay. Concepts, ideas are very powerful things. You can't kill them with bullets. So get the word out. Thoughts and ideas, our endeavor is to overcome ignorance with knowledge, and God has provided us all the facts that we need. To tear down human speculations with God's truth. Paul calls them fortresses. And they are fortresses. I mean, think about it. Philosophies. People get these weird philosophies. You know, that they build up in time, whatever, and it's hard, you know, to get through to them. I know there's one that if you're into Eastern philosophy, it's the relevance of everything, and that nothing is real, and that there's no such thing as good or bad. Yeah. It's an easy one to kind of cut through. You know, if there's no sense, you know, no difference between reality and non-reality, or everything's the way you perceive it only. When you cross the street, do you look both ways? You kind of assume there's a big reality coming at you. If it's a bus, you don't sit there and go, that's not real. Okay? A lot of these armchair philosophies just don't work in the real world. Okay? It could be religions. I mean, isn't a lot of the religions out there really not religions? They're like political power bases that the ones higher up use in order to exercise power, and all the other little, you know, adherents of it, or, you know, they think it's a religion and they have a faith, but what they're being told has nothing to do with the one true God. Think of Islam, think of Catholicism. Those aren't really religions. They're their own military, political powerhouses. Or just about, you know, the pseudosciences. How strong of a fortress is evolution in our school systems? You know, bad idea upon bad idea, but, you know, indoctrinated with half-truths and stuff, becomes something hard to battle against. But it can be brought down with the truth. Hammering it out there. Get people to see it. Okay. We also must guard our own thoughts by resisting the devil, taking thoughts captive, protecting ourselves. Make sure what you be careful what you're thinking about. Jesus warns his disciples about that all the time. Notice this, and Paul says to Ephesians, but this I say therefore and affirm together with the Lord, that you no longer walk just as the Gentiles also walk in the futility of their mind. That is the way they think. It's vain. It's temporary. Okay, Ecclesiastes is a good book for that. Being darkened in their understanding. Okay? They live in a very dim world, not bright one that, you know, sheds light on truth and stuff. Excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them. Notice it doesn't say what they don't know. President Reagan described it, you know, this way. It's not what they don't know that's the problem. It's what they know that's wrong. I mean, people that live in those other fortresses, the philosophies, the sciences, the religion, they believe absolutely that it's the truth. And it's the ignorance that's within them. And that's one of the things we're trying to overcome in ourselves, too. What is it that we know, absolutely know, the way we live off of it, it's part of our reality of everyday living, that's wrong because we bought into it. And this is why it's vitally important that God works on us every day, giving us a different perspective, a different list of values, of facts, to reconstruct how we perceive the world to be and how we perceive ourselves to be. Fallen from the glory of God and needing, you know, to come back to Him. Also, just really quickly, I think these are the last one. Not ignorant of his schemes. You know, this is one of the things that God's trying to give us. We know how the devil works. We know what he's trying to accomplish. That's what gives us an advantage. We're destroying speculations, taking every thought captive, and resisting. You know, a lot of times, if you just stand up to the bullies, you know, that's half the problem. Sometimes they'll walk away. They're looking for someone to kowtow. They're looking for somebody to submit. They're looking for somebody that won't give you any problems. Again, you resist. You know, and God's going to be behind you, and the devil's going to be fleeing. That works on the street, too. Okay, so these are lessons. We've got context questions to go back over these things. Does Satan appear? Why does Satan appear as an angel of light? Think about it. Okay. How can speculations be fortresses? How does one make thoughts captive? Okay, we helped you a little bit on that. Daily readings, man's first encounter with Satan. How did we do? Job 1, a mere man can withstand all the force of evil. Can. Job showed us. 1 Kings 18, Elijah tests the false prophets of Baal. Shows them to be what they are. Ephesians 6, the armor of God for the Christian. Armor of God. You notice there, and Paul's talked about the boxing and stuff like that. Yeah, there's some have commented that they're tired of me using martial arts illustrations. And I've quit using them. Only because I got tired of them. And there's nothing wrong with them. You know, Paul, I just showed you all of the ones that Paul uses. You know, if it's helpful as a metaphor, it's helpful. Right? The Lord's first recorded struggle with Satan, how did Christ do? Okay. And sixth day, John 18, Jesus does not resort to violence at his arrest. Sorta. Okay. Yeah, sometimes God gets a little physical. And he did on that occasion. But generally, what Jesus is going for is there's a better way of handling it in most cases. You've got your daily schedule. We're through that. We've got an invitation then. You're about to sing, Are You Willing to Open the Door? Look carefully at the words as you go through this. And it's one of the things that we got to wake up to. We constantly give an invitation for individuals that not brought themselves to Christ. I've known people like that, even my family, that will come to church and sit for 30 years and never once open the door. I don't know how they do it. You can sit there and listen to sermon after sermon, all the, you know, the Word of God out there, all that He's done for us, and never respond to it. They're there because of the family. Never respond to it. There's people that have grown up in their own family that are Christians. They know the importance of baptism, but they're still in their sins if they haven't been baptized. You know, it doesn't matter if you've been here for 50 years. If you've never done the things that are necessary, all that God commands you, you're still as lost as the worst infidel in the world. And there's not a thing God can do about it because He's already set the qualifications. And for Him, they're immutable. Now, there's sometimes as we commit ourselves to Christ and we let things get out of hand. I mean, that was the warning in the parable of the sower. You know, things can begin to close in. The world likes to work on us. We get off the track, down the path, into the woods, whatever. And we need help getting back. It's not a time to sit there and go, well, maybe I'll come back sometime. You know, it's not that bad now. You know, that's getting to know the ignorance in yourself. Now's the time to handle it. If there's anything we can do to help you, please let us know as we stand to sing.